morning from Washington, D.C. for everyone who is on the line with us. Good afternoon for those of you in the UK, Europe, and elsewhere. My name is Jen Shatwell. I'm Director of Account Management and Advisory Services here at Melcrum. Thanks for joining us today for the next edition in our monthly forum webinar series. The topic for today, you can see on the screen here, breaking free from rigid structures for greater IC agility. If you have tuned in over the last couple of months, you'll know that we very recently released a new body of research called the Agile IC Function. It's very much about looking at how we as internal communicators can organize ourselves and operate in far more agile and flexible sort of ways. So we're going to talk a little bit about that, and then we're going to look at a couple of case studies, two in particular, one from Cisco Systems and the other from Bell Helicopter. And this is going to really focus in on the topic of structuring ourselves and organizing ourselves for greater agility and toward business priorities. I am very happy to have with us today on the line Bridget Hall, who is the Senior Manager for Global Employee Communications at Bell Helicopter. So I always encourage you guys to use the Q&A, the question pod in the top right-hand corner of your screen to send questions in for myself and for Bridget. And don't wait until the end for the Q&A period. Feel free to send questions in over the course of the presentation because I'd love to make this as interactive a discussion as this platform will allow us to. So let's go ahead and get started here. As always, if you like what you see, feel free to tweet it. We are online on Twitter and LinkedIn. Would love for you guys to share some of these ideas with your peers. So, welcome to the world in which change is very much business as usual. These are verbatim sort of quotes from yourselves, actually. We surveyed the forum membership earlier this year and asked what about so much change is really causing pain points here. And so you can see in the bottom left-hand corner of the screen the top three challenges that you all articulated for us. Number one being a level of noise in the system and our ability to reduce that noise, cut through the clutter, and actually get our messages to employees across organizations. The second one, figuring out and deploying the best structure and service model for IC. That's kind of where we're going to focus in on today in this presentation. To be quite honest with you, when we set out in this research endeavor, we actually thought that we would be answering that question specifically. What is the best structure for internal communications? But very much in the spirit of agility, we ended up somewhere else. And it's not necessarily all about structure. And what I love about the Cisco and Bell Helicopter case studies is that they show us that structure is not necessarily the sole answer to agility. There's a lot more that is involved here. And so, this one presentation is just a piece of a greater body of research that we would love to take you through at any point in time. So make note of things that you see and things that you like and that you'd want to jump on the phone and talk with us about a little bit further. And we'd love to follow up with you after the presentation. The other thing I want to call out on this screen, in the bottom right-hand side, that one quote that talks about a lopsided talent model. So the concept that, a lot of our teams and a lot of our peers are heavily editorial or potentially former journalists. We are constantly writing copy. We, as communicators, are very much focused on content development and messaging. But this one quote really stood out to me because it's essentially one member saying, "That's great. Definitely a strength, but in times of change, in times of uncertainty, sometimes that strength becomes a little bit of an obstacle because we're not necessarily running at change or running at opportunities to for greater internal communication because of the fact that we're a little bit too editorial. So, what are those other skill sets? What are those other muscles we need to be building and flexing in order to really get that seat at the table when a new CEO comes on board and there's a new strategy to roll out across an organization, certainly in times of mergers and acquisitions, which is a question that we have heard from a number of members actually in the last couple of weeks. So certainly a topic of interest here. So interesting. We're going to look at talent today. We're going to look at structure today. Can't wait to hear what you guys think about these kinds of concepts and how they get us to greater agility. And here's what that agility really looks like. This is a silly slide. You're going to have to forgive me. There are two of them in this presentation. But I love the concept of, we actually quote in our research report a concept from C.K. Prahlad, who was one of the great thinkers in sort of business organizational structure. And he puts forward this concept of the Velcro organization. So if you can imagine Velcro, your favorite pair of sneakers when you were younger, or maybe your kid's pair of sneakers now, Velcro is incredibly snug and fit and tight when it is secured, so in operating mode. But it also has this quality of very easily and quickly being able to be loosened, rearranged, and reassembled in a different shape or form or direction. But in that different shape and form or direction, it is equally as tight and snug and fit and well operating, right? So think about that over the course of this presentation. And when we start talking about the concept of how we organize ourselves as a function, how we structure ourselves, are we giving ourselves the ability? Are we actually allowing ourselves to reassemble, to loosen quickly our team, and to reassemble talent and skills in such a way that we're able to be there for the business in times of change and run at priorities as they shift, due to market forces and things of that nature? That's really what today is all about. So keep Velcro in your mind. And you might have seen this before in some of our previous webinar presentations on this topic, but it's worth showing you again. These are four sort of IC paradigms, if you will, but sort of long-held principles or characteristics of internal communications on the left-hand side of the page. On the right-hand side of the page are where we're actually suggesting or recommending internal communications move as a function, as a discipline, in order to become the agile IC function. So the first one there, extensive sequential planning. This is very much the waterfall planning process. It starts with, what's the objective? Who is our audience? Where's the strategy? It looks like a waterfall. It feels like a waterfall. It's got momentum like a waterfall, and it quite frankly can sort of drown you at the bottom of it. Versus if you saw our presentation of EMC's iterative, adaptive, sort of agile campaign process, the idea of taking long projects and sprints, the idea of breaking up large messages into chapters, this is all what we mean by adaptive iterative planning. The change curve, certainly aren't throwing that out the window by any stretch of the imagination, so don't think that that's true. But the concept that any individual would actually move through the change curve, the psychological model reflective of change, in a linear or predictable way, that's what we're saying needs to change. And instead, we need to capitalize on these, what we're calling employee moments of truth. So opportunities where an individual employee is going to invest a great deal of emotional capital in determining how they feel about the brand, or how they feel about a new strategy and whether they are on board or not. So, this is very much, I guess, acknowledging that individuals can actually jump backwards on the change curve, so to speak, or just appear somewhere further along the change curve than you would have expected them to. Now, the bottom two here, the business partner model and IC specialists, this is where we're focusing in on here today, because the business partner mindset is absolutely still valid, but we're suggesting that the model, so the idea of actually baking ourselves or embedding ourselves within business units across the organization or tethering ourselves to individual executives, that concept is not giving us the flexibility and the agility that we need to run at new opportunities when they arise or to support the business in change when change occurs. So the organizing ourselves around go-to-market priorities is actually what you're going to see organizations do in the presentation today. So again, it's the business partner model, not the business partner mindset that we're calling into question here. Being a trusted advisor to the business is always going to be important. And then the final thing here, IC specialists. So the concept of, and I can say this because I was actually an internet content manager before I was working at Melcrum. So I can say it's no longer okay for me to come and join a business and join a team and say, I'm going to be an internet content manager 100% of the time. Because quite frankly, there's opportunities for me to be doing some other things. I've got more of a generalist skill set, and we're seeing more and more companies tap into those other skills that I bring to the table that aren't necessarily required of my job description as an internet content manager. You're going to see both of these come to life, organizing around go-to-market priorities and grooming and developing communications generalists in both of the case studies that I present today. Before I dive into the Cisco case study, let me ask you guys a question. I'm going to open a poll in the bottom right-hand corner of the screen. Which of these IC paradigms, so the left-hand side of the page, which of these would be hardest for you to move away from at your organization? I'm really interested to see where you guys are on this kind of spectrum of agility. So if you could just take a moment to indicate for me where you think it would be hardest to make change or to move left to right across the screen in your organization, that would be fantastic. I'll give you just a minute to put your answers in. There's a lot of you on the phone, actually, so I'll give you just a minute. Okay. Let me go ahead and publish these results so you can see what your peers on the phone are saying. This is it's an interesting sort of three-way tie. It almost looks like between the top three kind of pillars here. So extensive sequential planning, moving away from that linear, predictable change curve process to something more spontaneous, like employing moments of truth. And then, of course, the business partner model is what is coming in amongst the top three. It looks like the planning process and the business partner model are going to be the big ones there. So that's really interesting. For those of you who said the planning process is going to be toughest, if you haven't seen the EMC case study, please give us a call after today's webinar and ask someone at Melcrum to take you through that. It's a fantastic, fantastic case study, and it's a really great first step towards moving in that agile planning process. And then for the rest of you, the business partner model, if that's relevant to you, the today's presentation should be very interesting. Let me ask you one more question before we go forward, if you don't mind. I just would love to ask, on the right-hand side of the page, which of these characteristics of the Agile IC function are you actually closest to embracing fully at your organization? So, slightly different take on a similar question. Okay. Great. So we're seeing some good progress along that line, along those lines of the adaptive iterative planning process, capitalizing on employee moments of truth and developing communications generalists. Really, really, really good for us to know, so that informs our conversations with you guys going forward and some of the content that we can bring to this webinar series. So thanks for taking the time to do that. Let me go through the Cisco case study, and then I will tell you all about Bell Helicopter, and then I'll be excited to get Bridget on the line with me so she can answer your questions. Keep those questions coming on the top right-hand corner of the page. So the story for Cisco actually starts with a little bit of history here. Cisco, tech company, you can imagine, for a long period of time was in sort of growth strategy mode. It was actually a strategic shift for the company that prompted a structural change for the organization and for the internal communication function. So that was very much that strategic shift was actually very much brought about by the global financial crisis in about 2008. So you can imagine an organization this large, they sort of accumulated lots of communicators because of all of the executives across the business who would be out there, you know, bringing in new business, growing the business. They each need a bit of a communications team or a communications posse, if you will, to support them in messaging to employees and, of course, in public relations capacity and things like that. So there was quite a lot, actually, as many as 400 communicators around the business who were not working on a single team by any stretch, but also not really well together or in a cohesive manner. So when the business came to internal communications and said, "We're moving towards this value strategy. We need you to be leaner. We need you to kind of cut," you know, 30% of their budget was actually the ask for Cisco. The hardest part of that was that there was no single. They didn't operate as a single cost center, right? So IC just didn't even exist as a single cost center. They couldn't just go in and find 30% to cut. They first had to find internal communicators around the business and bring them together. So really important here. I don't have a slide that says agility doesn't equal this, that, and the other thing, but I might make one because it's really important for me to call out that agility does not necessarily equal lean. It is not Six Sigma. It is not necessarily just about becoming smaller. It is also not necessarily equal to centralization of the function. But what we are seeing is that over the course of time, more and more and greater agile functions have a greater degree of centralized control. That is actually very important so that you can find and know what all of your talent set is and find those resources and be able to move them around towards the Velcro organization. You have to have a little degree of central control in order to make that happen. So that's the key piece here. Now, I'm showing you a before and after shot here of the Cisco organizational structure for internal communication. So that call to action and after 2008 in order to reduce costs by 30%, they did that by centralizing. They also did that by reducing their headcount. So there's a significant reduction of headcount going on in that story as well. So then on the right-hand side of the page, that's very much what you see on the left. On the right-hand side of the page, you can see it going forward from that original centralization of the organization, there's still a little bit left on the table for them to enact. Specifically, even though they did achieve the 30% cost reductions, what they found in this new sort of more centralized structure was that they still weren't necessarily, communications weren't necessarily aligned to the top business priorities. In the tech company, those priorities can shift very quickly. Communications found that they were unable to shift quickly when those priorities did because of the fact that they weren't well aligned to priorities. Messaging wasn't aligned. There was a lot of redundancy going on across even the centralized internal communications team. So there was still some opportunity there for them to evolve even further and become even more effective and efficient. And that's where you'll see on the next slide that they go. Specifically, the yellow box here, the Communications Bureau, this is their executive communications team. That's where the next version of change is actually taking place. So imagine me kind of double-clicking on that yellow box there. That's where I'm taking you to show you that executive comms at Cisco now is taking a step further and sort of aligning themselves to business priorities. So if you can imagine this being a typical business priority team at Cisco, what they're doing is using a shared services model to pool communications resources and then bringing those resources together specifically around one of 10 current business priorities for Cisco. The lead owner that you see here, you're not even necessarily getting a full-time employee on these business priority teams. You're only getting half of one of these lead owners in the top left-hand corner of the page. In the bottom right-hand corner of the page, you're only getting one-fifth of an audience experience manager. So you're not necessarily even pulling 100% of any given person onto this team. It's based on need and requirements for supporting the business priority. So this lead owner is very much in charge of coming up with overarching strategy. In my previous, a former life and working at a communications agency, I would have likened this person to a strategic director or the creative director. But essentially coming in at about part-time on any given business priority teams and then supporting two teams out of 10, coming up with launch plans, looking at that overarching strategy. The two business priority managers, they're at 100% dedication. So there are two for each of these business priorities. These are the folks that are really responsible for relationship management. So they are your primary points of contact with individual executives who are tied to business priorities. They're the folks who are constantly interacting with and ensuring a connection to executives and others on business priority teams. You would call them potentially account managers, you could call them suits, but these are very much your relationship managers. Your audience experience manager, this is actually a title that we are seeing pop up a lot more frequently in our conversations with forum members when they're talking about building out their teams and hiring folks. The concept of being able to really understand channels within your own organization, not even at a broad level, but what channels are most impactful for each of your own audience segments across your business, so unique to you. This person is going to be very much responsible for having that level of expertise, understanding it, looking at data, and being able to advise business priority teams which channels are going to be most effective for their messages in supporting the business priorities and communicating about them internally. And then, of course, 1 to 2 content developers. These are both in at 100%. I love the idea of being able to pull people in, not just around business priorities in a shared kind of way, but also being able to pull in, you know, portions of people, so to speak. Again, it's all about need. It's all about breaking out of job descriptions, moving from an IC specialist toward communications generalist, pushing people to, you know, de-link themselves from individual executives, from individual business units. These two paradigms, the bottom two paradigms that we saw in the last couple of slides ago, that's very much what this is about. The next page is my other silly page, but I have to be honest with you. I was presenting this case study and doing, I think, a poor job of it at one of our forum executive meetings. And Kelly Parsons, our chief of research, just kind of got up and doodled this on a big giant piece of paper, and it made so much sense to me. But if you have any trouble understanding the evolution of the Cisco story and of the Cisco IC function, you'll see here. So pre-2011, it was very much about dedicated executive communication support, right? So the little orange people are all of your internal communicators, very much organized around individual executives at Cisco. That's pre-2011. Then being given the mandate to become lean and to reduce costs by 30%, they moved to a shared services model. That shared services communications bureau sat within an overarching, more centralized communications function, like we saw in that before and after slide. But the communications bureau itself moved to a shared services. So then you've got a pool of internal communicators essentially supporting individual executives, but not dedicated to individual executives. That's the concept of de-linking or untethering ourselves from individuals. And then, of course, the move further from 2014 and forward is essentially getting rid of the little executives on the left-hand side of the page here and instead offering a shared services support model towards business priorities, and then being able to, you know, provide support to executives given those executives' relationship to business priorities. And that's what you can kind of see here. The top 100 executives are still very much well looked after at Cisco. They are also reevaluated on an annual basis to make sure that the top 100 are actually business priority spokespeople and leaders across the organization, so to ensure that internal communication support is going to the right people. And then, of course, you've got regional spokespeople and other executives at the bottom of this pyramid that are supported by more hybrid support, so individuals who play both public relations, investor relations, internal communications roles all in one. And then the Communications Resource Center that you see for all other executives, those 350 SVPs there, that's another shared services model, but looking more along the lines of, you know, helping those executives give presentations, giving them templates and tools and things with which to kind of self-serve a little bit. So there's a lot more to the Cisco story, and we'd be happy to share that with you at any point in time. It's a big story. There's a lot to look at, and the topic of internal communication structure is one that a lot of folks are interested in. So I wanted to set this up, and I wanted to include that in today's presentation, because what's fantastic about putting Cisco and the Bell helicopter story side by side is that you see a similar move toward organizing around go-to-market priorities. But whereas Cisco required sort of formal structural changes, Bell Helicopter, as you'll see now, is actually using a more informal approach to achieve the same agility. And they're using what they're calling experience matrices actually to move and to groom those IC specialists toward a more communications generalist space. So let's take a look at that and then start asking Bridget some questions. So this is the before and after shot from Cisco. In the before shot, there were hundreds of communicators across Cisco. But this is actually the full team at Bell Helicopter. So in and of itself, quite different from the Cisco format, because the team is just much smaller. I show this to you, and there are some folks in this organizational structure that are highlighted in orange. Because what Bell is actually doing is forming what they're calling natural work teams by identifying individuals across this organizational structure with different skill sets, very much like the business priority teams that you saw in Cisco. So bringing different talent sets to the table in different capacities at different, 100% or 50% kind of dedication as well. They're just kind of selecting individuals from across their organizational structure and bringing them together to organize themselves around natural work team or as natural work teams, so around these go-to-market priorities. This is actually something that we're seeing other organizations do, and haven't necessarily profiled them yet, but it's interesting too. In Bell and Bridget will talk to us a little bit more about this in a minute. But I asked her the question, well, do you give these folks, these individuals on a natural work team, is it a set percentage of their time that should be supporting the go-to-market priority versus their day jobs? This is the internet content manager being that and then more. And at Bell, it's not necessarily formalized like that. But at other organizations, we're actually seeing a more formal percentage. So some organizations are building into your job description, your day job, I'm putting that word in quotes, right? So your quote unquote day job, we expect you to spend potentially 70% of your time on, and then the remaining 30% of your time, we need you to be operating in this sort of natural work team environment or a go-to-market organized market, go-to-market kind of organized team. So we're seeing some people take a more formal, kind of specified approach to it, different in individual organizations, but something interesting to kind of think about. Now, how does Bell actually pick these individuals? What are they using to identify who is best suited to join the commercial market natural work team, for example? Well, they actually, prior to these natural work teams, had in place what they call experience matrices. And so, this is the idea that career development is not necessarily ladder-like, but is actually more lattice-like. So what they've done is actually create these honeycombs that you see on the right-hand side of the page for individual positions across that organizational structure that you saw. And what this is suggesting, this is the experience matrix for an internal communications leader. What this is saying is that to become an internal communications leader at Bell Helicopter, you need to bring to the table a generalist skill set and background. The gray areas here, human resources, inspiring talent, key campaign lead, those kind of experiences are going to be absolutely required, sort of second tier or second level needed experiences because they're closer to that kind of desired or aspired role. And then, of course, in the outer layer here in red and light blue, you can see kind of first level needed experiences. These are going to be important, some of them more than others. Those that are highlighted in yellow are actually required for the internal communications leader. And then those in blue are kind of what you brought to the table before you ever worked at Bell. So that could be both professional experiences, they could be educational experiences, internships, and things like that. There's many things that I love about this. There's a couple of things I want to point out. So, first of all, Bell is giving credit for previous experience. These guys are giving credit to the fact that you did spend a summer abroad, for example, or you did have an internship before you had your first professional career. In a previous role, you might have been a social media strategist, but you're not necessarily required to do social media work in your current role. This allows me to kind of look beyond your job description at Bell in the current state and pull you onto a team based on skills I know you have, even though I haven't asked you to tap into them in your day-to-day job here. So in stretching beyond that 70%, so to speak, into more business priority organized teams, I can pull back and reach back into your experience and pull forward, skills and things beyond what we generally ask you to do. I think that's really fantastic. The folks at Cisco actually saw this and thought that this was really a fantastic model. And if you think about, I mentioned in the tech sector that those business priorities can change quite quickly. They don't change as quickly for Bell Helicopter, but you can imagine if they did, if you've got natural work teams already set up and your resources across the organization and that org structure are kind of already at capacity. I can't pull the social media strategists off this one work team, natural work team, in order to be able to bring them in on this other one. But if there is somebody with capacity who has social media experience who isn't necessarily the social media strategist on our team today, let's tap into that previous experience, bring that forward, bring that to the table. There's a lot of really great stuff here that allows for agility and flexibility. The other thing that we really like about this, obviously holding it up as a best practice. So this whole idea of being able to grow your talent and groom communications generalists in a more steady state environment when going into the creation of a natural work team, Bridget and her coworkers can sit down and say, okay, well, we've got this talent on our team. We know that we've got this career development path for any given individual. Here are some of the first level needed experiences that are related to what we know to be their aspired role here at Bell Helicopter. How can we use these natural work team opportunities in order to essentially fast track this individual's career development, right? So how can we actually pair these natural work teams with our experience matrices in order to grow people in sort of lateral ways? Some organizations that we're working with are moving to a shared services model, and they said to me, which I thought was fantastic, they said this is great because a lot of their team members have reservations about moving into a shared services model because they don't think they're looking at it as kind of a lateral move, and they're also concerned that they're no longer going to have a very clear, you know, that ladder mentality is assuring in some regards. Because you can see the top, right? You know exactly what the next step is in order to get to the top of that ladder. That's a sure thing. So in a lattice kind of environment, there can be a little bit of anxiety there for your resources and your team members, a little bit of uncertainty. And this kind of thing is actually helpful. The experience matrix is helpful in showing people and communicating to your team. Lateral moves can actually be incredibly beneficial. You know, getting a little bit of experience being a campaign lead on this natural work team, even though you know, the natural work team itself might not be where you want to end up later on in your career, it's necessary skills. It's a necessary muscle for you to be building and for you to ultimately need to be able to flex in your desired role. So this is a great communications tool for anyone who is in that kind of a position as well, moving into a more kind of shared services model or potentially a flatter structure. And then finally, this is my last slide. So this is just to kind of emphasize and illustrate for you guys again the concept of fast tracking career growth. It's also succession planning, to be quite honest with you, knowing that, you know, you've got a team of resources out there who have generalist skills, so that, you know, given a surprise departure or given, you know, someone falling ill and needing to be away for quite a long period of time, given, you know, individuals, women who take maternity leave, men who take paternity leave, filling those shoes becomes less of an ordeal, so to speak, because you know that you've got individuals who have all of these muscles in different areas and are more generalist communicators and can step in and lean in all kinds of different ways. Breaking free of job descriptions. So that's the couple of things I want to make sure that you guys get from this presentation. Breaking free of the structures, right? So delinking ourselves from individual executives if we can, getting away from being too deeply embedded in individual business units. All of these kind of tethers are going to keep us from becoming the agile IC function. And likewise, job descriptions and titles and things like that, you know, let's look at a more generalist kind of opportunity for our talent and all the different ways that we can groom them accordingly. Just let me ask you another question, and then I would love to invite Bridget to get to on the last longer. How many of you guys, if you can use the little hand thing, you'll see a little individual up in the top corner of your screen there. It's a hand function, and you can raise your hand. I would love for you guys to raise your hands if you have anything like an experience matrix model or framework at your organization for talent development. Are you guys using anything like that? I see a couple of hands. Just a couple, though. It looks like just a handful. Okay, so let me invite Bridget. I am going to unmute you. All right, Bridget, you are live. I would love for you to tell us a little bit more about this story. I've done the sort of bare bones presentation of the case study, but I would love for you to tell our audience kind of where this came from at Bell and how it's working for you in real time.
Sure. Yeah. Wonderful. I'm honored to be here. So thank you, Jen. You did a great job of teeing up kind of where we're at and what we're working on here at Bell Helicopter. I think, you know, one of the things, I would love to have a team like Cisco and have 400 employees working on internal communications. But the reality is we don't. We're very small, as you saw in the previous slides. We're a very small organization in terms of communication. And we've had the ability to grow our department because we've gotten a seat at the table and because we've been able to show some great business wins. But we're still relatively small with a total of maximum of about 25 to 27 employees at any given time, focusing on all aspects of communications, everything from internal communications to public relations, trade shows, government affairs, community relations. I mean, we have the full gamut of what would be considered organizational communications, both internal and external. And kind of what we recognized as a leadership team sat back and looked at our business, we realized there's really this kind of natural ebb and flow to what's going on within our business based on our business priorities and where we're going, where we would be really, really our external team would be really heavily focused on working about 6 or 7 priorities at once, and things would be a little bit more quiet for our internal team. And so there's kind of this natural flow, and then things would shift midway through the year, and our internal team would be working crazy hours trying to execute on some of the big change initiatives and other things that we're working on, while our external team kind of dipped off a little bit. And so we were looking at how can we answer the surge and the capacity that we have at any given time throughout the year and at any given priority, kind of where as major priorities and major opportunities pop up, how can we balance that need with the day-to-day business and kind of our existing structure that we have, because we're not able to grow our team any, while at the same time aligning the assignments that we're giving to people to their personal and professional growth and development plans. So we kind of sat back and said, and it also, you know, some of it talked to how do we also build better business acumen within our communications department. So we had at the time very siloed organizations where people were so structured on working in their kind of field of expertise. And we love that, right? So we love that we have subject matter experts, but we're kind of looking at how do we develop communications generalists so we can take any one person and throw them to be a lead on a major campaign, and they can think through all necessary aspects of the business priority. So what do we need to do from an internal perspective? Who do we need to communicate to from an external perspective? Is there a level of trade show impact to this? Is there an impact to our government affairs team and where things are at? They don't necessarily need to know all of that, but they have a team around them who can help fill in the gaps. And at the same time, we're giving some of those folks that haven't worked government affairs an opportunity to experience that and to gain that firsthand knowledge by working side by side with someone who's intimately familiar with our legislative process and the communications pieces. And then that legislative person is learning more about marketing communications and how you would take a concept like whatever the campaign is that they're working on to market. And so you were really kind of developing these generalists and helping them to develop additional skills that are marketable, whether they want to grow their career within Bell Helicopter, if they want to take it to our parent organization, which is Textron Incorporated, or if they want to, you know, heaven forbid, take it elsewhere. But they're building this great kind of portfolio of experiences that not only help them, but they're directly impacting our business priorities and what's going on at Bell Helicopter and how we can be successful in the market. So, does that answer your question, Jen?
Absolutely. I have some questions coming in, Bridget, so I hope you don't mind if I ask you some questions from the crowd.
Absolutely.
just a reminder to everyone on the line, use the question pod in the top right-hand corner of your screen to send those questions into me for Bridget. So Bridget, did you come up with these experience matrices, or did you use this framework from somewhere else? How did you get the idea to kind of build this out, and do you, have you created one for every role on your team, or for just a couple?
Sure. Yeah. So the idea kind of came about, we worked really in partnership with our talent development team here at Bell Helicopter. So actually this experience matrix isn't specific to communications. We actually have one for every executive role within the company. So we have one for engineering, we have one for human resources at the senior level. And then each organization has kind of embraced them differently. So for communications, we worked with our talent development team to sit down and talk through at our executive vice president of communications and government affairs level, what does it look like if somebody wants to become that role? And then they spread it out and they told the story of what that looks like. I then took it and worked with our talent development team to develop the next level for internal communications or employee communications, as we call it. But we do not right now have one for the other departments within communications. So we actually have an offsite in January where our leadership team is going off and we are sitting down and framing out development matrices for what we call strategic communications, which is all of our public relations work and public affairs media relations. We're going to be setting one up for government affairs and community relations, and one for our marketing communications, which is trade shows and events, as well as kind of your visual creative work. So we're going to be sitting down with our talent development team and our human resources business partner to sit down and frame those out for the rest of the organization and actually go through. So each employee right now has a development plan. Not all development plans are linked back to a particular experience matrix, but we're going to be looking at those in January and framing it out for the rest of the communications and government affairs department. But the concept kind of for our talent development team kind of came about, I forget her name now, but she's the senior vice president at Deloitte of human resources. She wrote a book not too long ago about the lattice movement. And so we were doing some benchmarking with Deloitte and talking to them. Theirs isn't quite as formal and it's not quite the same, but we'd started looking at, as an organization, you only have so many director level roles and so many vice president level roles and so many executive vice president roles. So how can we continue to help people to grow their career and give them additional challenges and help them see that, you might need to step out of your functional organization to gain a better insight in how you can be a better business leader. So we as an organization had been talking about that. Then we ran across the Deloitte book. So we did a little bit of benchmarking with Deloitte. And then we as a team kind of came up with this experience matrix, which really works well for our organization. And I think it's, you know, the great part about it is you can see it living in our organization today. So even within our communications department, we've made a couple moves within our Bell Helicopter team, where we've taken folks from the internal team and exported them to the external team. So they're gaining those experiences. But then also with Textron, our corporate headquarters, we've sent some folks from our team up there and are getting folks from corporate who used to work in the external team to come down and work on our internal team. So we're really seeing some growth there. But then also at our executive leadership team level, who are kind of the business leaders over our whole organization, we see it in play every single day too. So really focusing on promoting from within and developing talent, and how do we do that, recognizing that we're a small team and we can't make moves, just don't happen every day. And so how do you give people an opportunity to gain some experiences without having to make a formal structure change?
Right. I wonder if you can talk a little bit about the natural work teams themselves. So when you pull folks together based on, you know, skills and talent and needed for aspired roles and experiences. Talk a little bit about the natural work team itself and what that looks like and feels like. And so, you know, what do I do differently on the natural work team versus, you know, in my standard role at Bell Helicopter? What are the key differences there?
Yep. So we're actually in like iteration 2 or 3 of the natural work team concept. So when it originally rolled out, we rolled it out based on our business segments. So we're a global helicopter manufacturer with business that we support military businesses primarily. And then we also have a large commercial or civil component, which looks at more it's really more around parapublic and helicopter emergency services, oil and gas exploration, those kind of functions. And then we have what we call aftermarket support, customer support and service, which is all the aftermarket stuff. So after you buy your helicopter, kind of how do we keep servicing it as you go along? So we had originally rolled out these natural work teams around those business units to say, so looking at those were our big priorities always fell into one of those three buckets. So whether it was expanding foreign military sales for our military component, or it was achieving first flight on a new commercial program, or increasing sales on the customer support and service side, one of the business priorities kind of fell in those areas. So what we looked at is to say, how can we more holistically serve that organization without moving people and having them fully dedicated? So we don't ever do kind of this is 15% of your work or 20% of your work. But what we said is, you are an expert in internal communications. We want you to get embedded with the programs team on the military side of the business so you can help connect our employees with what's happening in that business and what our business priorities are and where we're going. Similarly, you're the social media expert. So we're going to deploy you to that team. And so they'd meet on a weekly basis, and they'd go over what's going on in the military business, how can we support it from a social media perspective, what's the internal take to it, what's the external take to it. And so you'd have one person who kind of led the team, but then each individual person on that team was responsible for kind of bringing their expertise to the table and sharing that, and then and or saying, I'm really interested in media relations. I know that you're swamped working XYZ. Can I help you and take over and take lead on that project? Or even that leader saying, hey, you know, we're over capacity. I need some help. And asking who can help and who can take on an additional task, even though it doesn't fall within their natural kind of day job, whether they're whatever function they land in. So they would meet on a weekly basis. They would kind of talk through that stuff. We've shifted now to really looking at how can we support our organization on a global basis. So now we're looking at regionally, how do we support the teams and asking our teams to look at it from having all three of those programs in a region. What are we doing to support that region and grow that region and develop that region? And how is communication supporting that organization?
Got it. Okay. For those of you on the phone, you'll see I put up another poll just to kind of be out there while we're having this conversation. I'm interested to hear or to see if anybody else on the line is kind of moving towards more go-to-market oriented structures. But while you're answering that poll for everybody on the phone, another question to you, Bridget. What's the hardest thing about organizing natural work teams? So if you guys were looking at, you know, lessons learned or potential pitfalls, if I'm another person on the call today and I'm thinking about potentially pulling my teams together in these natural work team-like structures, what advice would you give to them as far as like we tried this and it didn't quite work, so beware? Are there any pitfalls or lessons learned that you would share?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think when I look back, when we originally rolled out the first wave kind of our natural work team, there was a lot of hesitation within the organization, within the group, within the team. Folks, I think, didn't really clearly know their role. So definitely the first lesson learned is really developing some clear expectations of what you're trying to to do with this natural work team, and then having very specific conversations with individuals on the team, right? So if I put Jane on the team because I think that Jane needs could really develop from learning more about social media, I want to be very specific with her and saying, Jane, I need you to partner with Tim because I need you to be, I want you to learn social media because I really believe it will help you in your as you go forward. But I also need you to bring XYZ to the team because you're the expert in that area. So definitely setting clear expectations around A, what the natural work team is responsible for, and then what each individual is responsible for. I would also say scoping the work. So one thing that we did is we were very broad in our scope. Natural work team is going to cover all of military programs, right? I would have taken it down to the next level, and we're doing this some now in saying this natural work team is responsible for foreign military sales. And so they're not kind of all over the place. They've got more of a scope of what they're looking at, and then setting the expectation, here are your deliverables. So we're looking for a comprehensive communication strategy, tools and tactics for how you're going to implement, audience for who you're going to be talking to, objectives for what you're trying to accomplish, and really kind of scoping it out more and giving folks kind of a clear start and stop, right? So we're starting at this time. We're going to assess it at, you know, 6 months down the road or 3 months down the road. And then the goal is to have your campaign wrapped up in 18 months. I think the challenge is we kind of scoped it so large and there was no real start and stop. And so people kind of didn't really gain traction right away around what they were supposed to be bringing to the table or how they were supposed to be integrating into this team. It became more of a status report out instead of a group kind of coming together to develop this integrated campaign strategy, if you will.
Got it. And I might have asked you this when I saw you in San Diego, but what about individuals on your team who are maybe just really happy doing what they're good at? Maybe who are a little bit resistant to moving toward a generalist capacity or space or skill set, but who are really just focused on, I'm quite good at social media. I want to stay good at social media, and I don't have an interest in learning about all of these other things. Do you get any resistance?
Yeah, so definitely. So definitely you hear a lot of, I don't get this. I don't know what they want me to do. I don't really have interest in XYZ. But I think what we have, our continual mantra or talk track is around the importance of business acumen. And so regardless of whether or not you really feel that you want to gain some additional skills in the, let's say, media relations space, it is extremely important that you understand the business and you understand the impact of when we do something on social media that it has on media relations. Or you understand the impact of an employee communication and what that does for our external team. So we kind of have that conversation, and we completely recognize and value people who want to go deep in a particular skill set. But a conversation that we have across the board here is that you can stay in a chair as long as you want to, as long as you are getting better and are the best at what you do. So you can be, we don't care if you want to be the social media expert for Bell Helicopter, that is excellent, but you need to continue to develop your skills, you need to continue to reach outside of the box, and you need to keep finding new ways to elevate year over year. It's not enough to sit there and just say, I've done this way for the last 3 years, I'm going to continue to do it. And it's a hard conversation to have, but it's a real conversation. And, you know, our CEO says all the time, he says, if you're not getting better, you're getting beat. And we have truly embraced that, that concept within communications. And, you know, we often talk about, how do you get a seat at the table? Well, we've been very successful in getting that seat at the table. And the only way we're going to continue to do it is if we continue to improve and continue to get better and bring new solutions to our customers. And so it's something that we're really focused on. But we absolutely say you can stay there as long as you want, as long as you're getting better and as long as you're keeping us kind of top of game. So
yeah, absolutely. I love it. Thank you so much for that, Bridget. I really appreciate it. Again, for everybody on the phone, Bridget is the Senior Manager for Global Employee Communications at Bell Helicopter. She and her team were fabulous in working with us to develop this case study as part of the Agile IT Function body of research. There's some really interesting concepts here, again, organizing around go-to-market priorities. That seat at the table that Bridget's talking about, there's some really interesting implications there. We've been talking for years about, you know, blurring of the lines between internal and external communications. I think that's underscored by this concept of developing communications generalists, of organizing around go-to-market priorities. Those business priority teams at Cisco are cross-functional. They include folks from marketing. They include folks from public relations. So that blurring of the lines is just that much more, for me, paramount these days, more and more, as we are looking across the landscape and seeing, you know, finding best practices. And so I think that's relevant here. I think it's a really interesting topic for us to explore together. Would love to have some further conversations with folks on the phone about, you know, this and that concept. And so how do you develop those skill sets across your team? How do you take advantage of the blurring of those lines there so that you can, you know, it's employee engagement for business ends, right? So internal communications, what is our mandate? Yes, it is about engaging employees, among other things, but can we connect that to business priorities? Can we connect that to business success? And, you know, make ourselves and the work that we do essential if it isn't already considered so, and get that seat at the table. Some interesting ideas. I put those out there just to kind of whet your appetite for next month's webinar. We are right at the top of the hour. I would love to ask you in the poll that's on the bottom left-hand corner of your, or bottom right-hand corner of your screen, how would you rate today's webinar? If you'd take a minute just to give us some feedback, that's always helpful for us in improving next month's experience. Next month, the topic is to be determined. Look out for some emails from us on that end. But really appreciate everyone on the phone, and Bridget, especially you taking time to talk with us through this case study. Thank you for that.
Absolutely. It was my honor.
Excellent. So to everybody on the phone, thanks so much for your time. I'm giving you a couple minutes back so you can get to your next meeting. I know how that goes. We look forward to seeing you next month, and send any questions that you have to whoever you know best at Melgrim. We'd love to follow up with you on this topic today. A copy of the presentation absolutely will be made available, and a replay of this cast will be made available.